We are now in week 5 of our series, Reignite Awakening the Spirit Within. And over the past few weeks, we've been sitting on one and only one powerful verse, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, and asking God to take this verse and to awaken what he has already placed in us through his gift, the Holy Spirit. I've specifically been using one translation for this particular verse. I have been using what they call the NIV, which reads, For the Spirit of God, God gave us, does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline. And I thought for a second, maybe you would appreciate, I mean, since it's only one verse, maybe you would appreciate seeing how other translations translate this verse. So I went on a little research project for you, and this is what we've got. The New American Standard Bible says, for God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and of love and of discipline. The New King James says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind. The NAB says, for God did not give us a spirit of cowardice, but rather of power and love and of self-control. The ESV, which is the one we use downstairs with our children, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and of self-control. The Message Bible, which is a more of a paraphrase style Bible, is not designed to be a study Bible. It's designed for somebody that doesn't really get into reading scripture, doesn't want the these, thous, and those, and wants something that reads more like a story. They translate it, God doesn't want us to be shy with his gifts, but bold and loving and sensible. And then one of the versions that I don't oft preach from, because if you try to read verses here, they get twice as long, it's called the Amplified Version. And what the Amplified Version does is not only translate it, it tries to take all the other translations and shove it into a sentence. So this is what they came up with. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity or cowardice or fear, but he has given us a spirit of power and love and of sound judgment and personal discipline, abilities that result in a calm, well-balanced mind and self-control. Now, all of those verses do the exact same thing. They begin to talk about what the Spirit took away. And it uses words. Fear. Timidity. Cowardness. And again, the word that I love that I'd never really thought about, the idea of being shy about one's faith. So according to what Paul wrote Timothy, the moment you receive the Spirit, all of this stuff goes out the door with you. Because you have a new power supply. And that's the first thing that it says that the Spirit gave us. We found two different words amongst the translations. Most of them translated the word power. And we had our object lesson last week with our light bulb and our drop cord and all the pieces and parts. And don't forget that because you may see it again at some point. But there were a few translations that just translated it boldness, which means that it's the opposite of shy. If you're bold about something, it doesn't mean that you stand out on the street corner with a bullhorn. It means that you do not ever take away the opportunity to share your story. So that's the first thing it gave. And the third thing it gave is, well, there's a lot of words here, folks. Just look at this. Self-discipline, sound mind, self-control, sensible, sound judgment, and personal discipline. By the way, this is next week's sermon, and that's going to be a doozy, okay? It's something that's very important that we understand. What is this that God gave us? But when you get to that middle thing that God gave us, what the Spirit does for us, all of them used the same word, didn't they? They all said the word love. I guess there's just no substitute, right? Love is love. I mean, love is that important thing that we need to remember. But I want you to be cautious. Because if you define that word love incorrectly, it takes away the entire meaning of this particular verse and what the Spirit gives us. You see, Paul isn't talking about the love we see in movies. This isn't boy meets girl, boy and girl fall in love, boy and girl have some kind of conflict that they have to overcome, boy and girl at some point in the middle of the movie end up kissing each other and realizing that love is more important than the conflict that they have, and by the time you get to the end of the movie, it's a happily ever after moment, and boy and girl walk off into Never Never Land, and everything is all perfect. That's not love. It's entertainment, but that's not love. He's not talking about butterflies in your stomach or emotional highs. This isn't Be My Valentine. That's not the love that he's talking about. In fact, as you begin to look at this word, he's talking about something deeper, stronger, and something that we don't like to think about. It is more demanding than what we think love is. We think love is that something that comes and goes. I fall into love, and I fall out of love, and then I fall in love again, and then I fall out of love. And love is that thing that comes and goes, and that's not what Paul's talking about here. That isn't what the Spirit gave you. He didn't give you an emotional roller coaster to ride until you get to heaven, where you're going to have your ups and downs, and you may actually get a little sick on it if you keep riding it. He's talking about what I want to call compassionate commitment. And those are two words, when you put them together, mean something totally different than what we think about love. Paul understood this very well because he banged on the people in Corinth about this idea. In fact, he tells them, without compassion, love is just noise. This is what it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. If I speak in tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all possessions to the poor and give away my own body to hardship, then I may boast, but have not love, I gain nothing. So as I read that, it is possible to be passionate for God, but still cold toward people. It's possible for us to be full of zeal, but have no compassion whatsoever. But if we're going to carry, there you go. If we're going to carry this idea and we're going to go into all the world, it's not just enough to be passionate for God, I must be compassionate for people. And Paul stressed it to this church in Corinth. Love without compassion is just religious noise. And then he takes a very few hard swings at them. Did you catch it? If I can have a great worship service. Man, we can have all the notes hit correctly. We can have all the beat together. We can be having the worship team up here. Man, they're just into it. And we can be into it. And we can be singing to our heart's desire. And we can think, isn't this awesome? But I can have a great worship service. But man, without love, resounding gong. You know why I like gongs? It might be the one instrument I know how to play. Because all you have to do is just get the thing. My son's like, no, you don't. I know how to make it make noise. Okay, you take a mallet and you just swing and you hit it and it goes boom. Anybody can make a noise out of it. I can't make a noise come out of their instruments. The saxophone and the tuba and the euphone. I can't make sound, but I know how to hit a gong. It's a resounding gong. It didn't say it was an instrumental gong. It says resounding. That's what it says you're like. It's like beating on a cymbal over and over again. If you have no love, that's what God hears. Just noise. I can preach awesome sermons and teach engaging lessons, but those lessons without love, they have no meaning. I mean, I can sit up here and dissect scriptures, and I can make wonderful, beautiful, entertaining sermons and wonderful, colorful slides and everything that everybody wants to see. But if it does not engage in the idea of whatever this love thing is, I just wasted your time. Because it doesn't have any meaning to it if all of this is just my wonderful effort put into words. I can have fantastic faith, even work miracles, move mountains. I've always wanted to do that. Wouldn't that be cool around here? Okay, I don't want the mountains. I want the faith to move snow at this point. I just want to look and say, you go over there, and it just gets up and walks across the street and gets out of. I want that right now. But even if I had that power and I had no love or compassion to go with it, it's nothing. I accomplished nothing. I can put on a good show, right? I mean, could you imagine if you had the power of healing today and you just walked through the UVA and you just started healing people and you had them and you just let it would be a wonderful show. But that's not the point of a miracle. Oh, this one hurts. I can be the most generous person on the planet. Man, I could give you the shirt off of my own back, but not today. It's way too cold for that, okay? But I could give you all of my possessions. I could give you everything in my house. I could just keep giving and giving and giving until there's nothing left. But no love? Yeah, that doesn't mean that you actually understand it. Just because you are able to give something doesn't mean that you understand the knowledge and the understanding of love. And the thing is, this wasn't a one-hit wonder for Paul. He actually pounded this idea into several of his letters as you begin to read about the idea of love. Colossians was another church that obviously had some struggles because Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 14 says, therefore, as God has chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. By the way, if you read those and you go back over to the definition of love, love is, there's your words. But he goes a step further. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Okay, now you're getting kind of personal. I'm supposed to not only love them, I'm supposed to forgive them. Not just tolerate them? Well, forgive as the Lord forgave you. How much did the Lord forgive of you? Everything. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So I do want you to see whatever this love is, it is a binding agent. It's what's supposed to, it's what makes this a family. Now, I have a family, both one I live with and both one that I grew up with, and I just want to go ahead and let you know we don't always get along, okay? We have our arguments, our disagreements, our disgruntledness, our frustrations, our anger, our, oh my gosh, I'm so tired of this. Every family has that. So with all of that stress, why do we keep going home? Because it's cold outside, right? I need a warm place to stay. No, we keep going home because there's just something about family that even though sometimes we drive each other crazy, we love them and we desire to be around them. And so that is the binding agent amongst all Christians that share faith. Our love for Christ translates into our love for each other, but I don't want you to miss this. When Paul is trying to define love, what's the first word in the fabric? Compassion. Compassion. It means that I'm not just supposed to look at you and have some kind of feeling for you. I'm supposed to look at you and see your needs and your wants and your struggles, and they're supposed to impact me. I'm supposed to have compassion. And I think sometimes we're missing this. So let's just define this a little more clearly. Love in the Spirit is, again, compassionate commitment. The two words have to work together. Not just how I feel. Because if you want to know how I feel, catch me on a bad day. Catch me when something didn't go my way. Catch me when I'm just stressed to the max and I'm tired of things. Catch me on those days, and I don't feel very compassionate. I feel like not a snowplow, a bulldozer. Just take out whatever's in my path because that's how I feel. But it isn't about how I feel. Compassionate commitment is about how I live. How is how I look at my people in the church and how I look at the people that God has given me and said, love them compassionately. Not how do I feel about you, because we're going to have our moments and days when we don't feel so good about each other. How do I live? And how do I pour my life into you? See, it's not just affection, but action. This isn't just that I want to tell you, yeah, what you wore today looks really nice, or that your haircut looks really good, or thank you for being here. This isn't just an affectionate greeting. This should translate into some kind of action into our lives. Yeah, this is where it gets kind of hard, because we get to the idea that it's not just words, but a willingness to get close and stay connected, even when it's uncomfortable. Even when we're going through a rough patch, and even when we're having struggles, and even when we don't get it, or even when somebody has hurt my feelings, or even when somebody has said something that maybe makes me think, why am I doing this? This compassionate commitment means that I draw close to them. Even when I get close to them, it's going to create an uncomfortable situation. This isn't happily ever after. There are very few lives that don't need this kind of compassion in them. But I got to warn you. If we as a church are going to embrace the Spirit and we're going to embrace the love that the Spirit brings with it, it's going to cost you. And here's the thing. Price tags don't matter at this point. What's the old MasterCard commercial? They go through all the things you can buy, and then they get to the end and they say, being able to pay for it is priceless. There is no price. There is no tag. There is no budget. Now, I realize people are going to say, well, you got to have money to pay for everything. Well, yes and no. We have to understand we can't just keep assigning price tags to people. Well, you know, they're worth about $100 to me, and after we get to $100, the 101, we're done. We can't look at a person and say, well, we've invested $1,000 into their life, and there's no price tag. There isn't. If you're truly compassionate, what was Jesus' price tag? The cross. Wow. Everything. Everything was on the table when you have compassion like Jesus did. Here's the other thing we don't like about this. It requires vulnerability. You can't go into somebody else's life trying to fix them. That is not compassion. That is insanity. Because you can't fix anybody. Usually when you go into somebody's life with compassion, you go in with the idea that, hey, I'm as broken as you, so let's just share our brokenness. Let's just talk about what you're going through. Maybe what you're going through, maybe I'll have some part of my life that can connect to your part, and we can do this together. It's going to make you vulnerable. Of course, the real reason that we don't usually like this idea of compassionate commitment is because when we talk about compassionate commitment, it means I must know myself, which, believe it or not, a lot of us don't really know ourselves. We think we do, but we spent so much time lying to ourselves about what we are, we really don't know what we are. And then I have to let others know me and be honest about my shortcomings, my downfalls, and my issues. That sounds kind of hard, doesn't it? I mean, that's letting people into spaces in my life that I just don't let people into. I mean, those doors are locked. with a deadbolt and a chain and a great big sign that says, do not enter. Because you know what? I can't let you see that. Do you know what a mess that room is? Do you know how much hurt is in that room? But that's the only way this begins to work. See, the reason why it works this way is because love, real spirit-filled love, builds bridges, not walls. My love, what I want to call love, keeps me safe. I build a nice little wall around me of comfort, what I'm willing to deal with, and as long as you don't get in my bubble, I can love you. You get in my bubble, and you may meet somebody that you don't want to meet. But that's not what love is for. Love is not to build protection for me. It is supposed to be to build a bridge into somebody else's life where our hurts can connect with one another. And that's where healing happens. But we don't often want to do that. So Jesus said, let me just make sure you get this. Because Jesus modeled this powerfully and repeatedly in the Gospels. This is how we see Jesus moved with compassion. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed, helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Matthew chapter 14, verse 14. He had compassion on them and he healed their sick. Interesting, we always talk about how many people Jesus healed. You realize it was all because of compassion. He looked at them. Matthew chapter 15, verse 32 says, I have compassion for these people. I do not want to send them away hungry. Matthew chapter 20, verse 34, Jesus had compassion on them and he touched their eyes. So I want you to see the pattern. When Jesus looked at people, and then compare it to how we do this. Jesus looked at, didn't keep his compassion at a distance. It says he acted. He got close. He touched. He fed. He healed. He wept. And he even embraced. Is that where your love takes you? See, compassionate love is not putting money in an offering box. Compassionate love is putting yourself into somebody's life. See, in God's plan, Jesus got up close and personal with us. It's the only way it would work. And if I'm going to know God, be known by God, and make God known, then I've got to do the same thing with others. And as I begin to think about this and process this, because this is not Barry territory, okay? It really isn't. This is, most of you know me, this is not my, I am not the huggy, warm, fuzzy kind of person. It's not me, but that's not what love is about. You see, what the Spirit kind of dropped on me is the more compassion I have, the more adaptable I become. So I want you to think about last week. We had our wonderful object lesson, and we had the cord stretched out across the stage, and it came around here, and there was a lamp, and we know the power plant. We know all. Do you know there was a piece of that connection that I didn't call into play? And I am betting most people here in this building didn't even notice it. But I brought it today. Look how small this is. Do you know what this is? Because this building was built in 1951. So that means these little electric sockets that are up here on our stage, they are a two-prong electric socket. The drop cord I was using last week is a three-pronger. I know math. Three does not fit into two, all right? Especially when you're dealing with electricity, okay? That's not how it works. So to make this work, I had to put the adapter on the end of the drop cord and then run the drop cord across the floor to the lamp, and then plug the lamp into the... You see how it works? Now, I want to make sure you're careful to understand the adapter did not compromise the connection. Okay? It wasn't a jury rig. I didn't like splice the end of the cord off and try to rewire it myself. You're thankful for that. Else we'd be meeting out in the parking lot today where it's cold because I probably would have burned the building down. So it did not compromise the connection. The adapter did not conform the drop cord, the electric socket, the lamp, or the bulb. Their connecting points were the exact same thing as when I started it. But it did adapt the connection so that the bulb could receive power. That's an important thing. Because that power is the message. So now I want to go back and let's talk about Jesus and how Jesus did this. Jesus style power, moment of love, he didn't conform to the world, but he did take on flesh, did he not? He stepped into our world. If you go back and you, like Rich said, you just finished Leviticus, and that means you just went through the tabernacle and all those feasts and all those. And hopefully you say, did we do sermon series on these? We did. Okay? So you go back through that and you realize in the Old Testament, they had to come to God through curtains. Jesus stepped into our world. He literally walked in our shoes. He literally followed us. He literally spoke our language. We did not have to learn some special language to communicate to Jesus. He came speaking what they were speaking. He felt our pain. Didn't he? We'll be at Easter in a couple of months, and we'll be talking about the pain, talking about the cross. See, that's what adaptable love does. It meets people exactly where they are. And if I find myself constantly frustrated that people don't get it and they don't respond, maybe the issue isn't my passion, but maybe it's my compassion. If I'm unwilling to adapt, it might mean that I have a growth sign. I've grown rigid. Not righteous. I'm demanding everybody open their lives up and meet my needs. I'm not willing to meet theirs. I'm not willing to let something plug into my life that's going to cause me any stress or things that I don't want to deal with. And Paul understood this. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 through 23, he writes, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law." Wow. Though I am not free from God's law, but under Christ's law. So as to win those not having the law. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people so that in all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessing. So how much adaptability did Paul have? He put everything on the table. Matter of fact, Paul only had one thing that he was not willing to adapt from. And that is, if you want to talk about Jesus not being Jesus, now you're in for a long debate. Everything else, Paul put the chips in the middle of the table and said, everything else we can have a conversation about. Jewish law, I can get rid of it. All the other law, I get rid of that. My weak, I can do weak. He just kept going and going and going because that is what love does. Love bends low. Love adjusts its posture. Love gets into the mess and brings the message. Love does not stand on the sidelines shouting instructions. Love gets into the mess and brings the message. So here's the question. Here's the thing that I want to know. I want you to wrestle with that. Is the way I deliver God's truth connectable, consumable to the people God has called me to reach? Or am I asking them to do something else different? Well, before I can reach you, you guys got to come to church once. Or you know what? Before I can reach you, you got to at least reach the 50% mark coming to church, because I can't talk to people that don't want to come to church. Is it, well, before I can talk to you, you got to get rid of this habit or that habit. What have you put in the way of love? You understand, whatever you put in the way, that's the limit to your adaptability. Because the connecting point has a purpose. There we go. It must deliver power. It must be relatable. It must be consumable. But because we are dealing across time and space and generations and all the different cultures, it must also be adaptable. Remember, we're not the fire starters, but we are nothing more than the stewards of the flame that was given to us. And if I'm not careful, I'll wield that power without love, and instead of igniting somebody's faith, I will explode their life. I will blow them apart simply because I had to make a point and win something. That's not the love that the Spirit gave you. If the only thing you could do with that love is win an argument, you got the wrong love. Because how many arguments did Jesus win? I can't think of any, because he didn't really argue. It wasn't his thing. You see, that's not Spirit-given love, because God empowers us with love. The kind that draws near, listens long, stays present, shows grace, and makes, and there's our word, connection. That's the love the Spirit gave. You know what? It doesn't just have no budget. You know what else it doesn't have? It has no clock. I'm not sure how you live a life with no clock, because my life is all structured by a clock. But Jesus seemed to always have time for everybody, didn't he? Wow, okay. Is that supposed to be our calling? So if I'm too busy to have time for people, then maybe the issue is I'm just too busy. And I've got to take some things out in order to make some room for others. So as we get to the end of our sermon today, this is your takeaway. The Spirit God gave you is not a spirit of fear. So it is not something that's supposed to make people afraid. If that's what the message you're delivering is making people afraid, you're connected to the wrong power source. Because it's not about fear. And the Spirit absolutely, positively does give us the power. His gifts, his presence, his power, it is all about him. I am nothing more than the drop cord laying across the stage to get it from one point to the other. But also a spirit of love and compassion, commitment, and vulnerability. That's what you got. That's the love spirit. Compassion, commitment, vulnerability. Compassion, commitment, vulnerability. That is what the church is supposed to be showing. I'm not trying to win an argument. I'm trying to win a world. Right? Today, God's calling us to reignite that kind of love. To stop seeing love as a soft feeling and start living it as a strong, spirit-fueled force. To stop being content with just merely being passionate. Passionate about God. And start being compassionate for the people. Folks, this world is not changed by loud voices. It's changed by loving hearts. We can stand and scream and yell and hold pickets and everything else. And you know what? You might convince a few people to join in and scream with you. But do you ever really change somebody's life by doing that? Think about your past experience. How many arguments have you won that you destroyed the relationship? How many times have you voiced your opinion and cost the ability to share Christ? I don't even want to think about the tally that I've got to worry about. But you do understand. The spirit that God gave us, yes, power. Huh. But it's that second aspect, love. Adaptability. The ability to take my life and pass it through Jesus and make it where it can plug into other people's lives. That's the Spirit.